webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 23rd of May, 2013. Coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studio. Shut your face, Williams. You're laughing, Michael.
I tell you, I won't even give a man a break for trying, will I?
See, family, we are... I can't even put that to air. Shut your face, Williams. If you're wondering what's happening here in the Gospel Revolution studios, Mike's on one end of the telephone line and I'm on the other of a video line, actually, and using Skype. And we just chit-chat away, and how's your cat, and what's happened with your grandmother's uncle's second cousin on his father's side who happens to be a fettler in the railways. And that's the sort of thing we're going on about. And then suddenly I say, welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 23rd. There you go again, Mike. Stop mocking me. Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 23rd of May, 2013, coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. And here from the Laughing GR, the Laughing Clown GR headquarters in Houston, Texas, please welcome the Laughing President of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Hi, Paris. I don't know which is funnier, an American trying to speak Aussie or an Aussie trying to speak American.
Man, you say hi. Sometimes when I'm with you, I kind of wish I was, really.
How was your day?
Mate, it's great. The sun's peeping up over the trees here. It's a hearty 70 degrees on my John Deere thermometer outside my window. And the birds are eating my bird seed in the bird seed feeder. But the wrong birds. I don't know how to get the right birds there, mate.
Well, it's because they found the right seed.
I want paying birds.
Yeah.
Always comes back to money with me for some reason.
Peck, peck, peck.
What? Oh, that could go several directions. Hey, listen, buddy, what's the news for today? What are we going to be doing today?
Well, it's a beautiful day in Houston, Texas. I see the sun is out. We've got some light breezes. We always have to get the weather report in here. And I ran out a bit ago and got myself a sausage biscuit. Don't tell anyone.
Now, here's an Australian-speaking American. You done got yourself sausage biscuit, boy. That's what I'm talking about. Make you slap your mama in the mouth, one of those little puppies.
That's not American.
well, neither is Southern. Southern's not American either, but that's where I'm stuck.
That's Tennessean. Jeez. Oh, my goodness.
So stay with us, family, for a packed show of something we don't really know about yet, because we don't know what it's going to be.
This is true.
And I get an amen. Yeah.
Hey, Mike, did you have an interesting week?
Yes, I really did have an interesting week. I went to Gainesville, Georgia. I was supposed to fly out on Friday morning. My 8:30 a.m. flight left at 3 p.m. and got whisked in way past the last moment. Our 7 o'clock meeting started at 8 o'clock. And Katie Griffin Airport.
Is that Kitty or Katie?
Katie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Katie Griffin.
It just sounded really sexy when you said Kitty. That's
Kitty.
I thought I might make
You're
a trip.
Kitty, Kitty. No. We've got to always bring this Aussie mind back to upright, but or at least attempt to do so.
yeah. Happy and good luck there.
So we started at 8 o'clock, and all the gospel revolutionaries were there. They were not a one complaining. I came in the jeans and shirt and boots that I wore on the plane and started the session. And then two times on Saturday in the afternoon and evening, and then one time on Sunday. We all went out to eat after the Sunday session. My flight wasn't supposed to leave until late. I deliberately asked Jeff to schedule me out late so that I'd have time to spend with folks if anybody could stay around. I stayed with Katie and Cliff Griffin and their three children, Ashley, Alex, and Clifford. A wonderful, wonderful experience. I was at home from the moment that I walked in the doors. I was treated like a prince, and we just had just the most wonderful time. I have adopted three more grandchildren now. So I have two in Kenya that are adopted other than my four grandchildren that live in Illinois.
Do they all know they're getting nothing when you die, mate?
Well, that would take away all the fun now, wouldn't it? So there's some things you keep secret. It's official. The parents agreed. And so I'm now Grandpa Mike to three more wonderful, wonderful young people.
What is this headlong rush in to be grandpa? I mean, if there's one thing anyone who knows you and knows your face and knows your physique and that, the one thing that they cannot put together is a picture of you and sitting on the rocking chair on the general store front porch playing checkers and the beard and the, you know, yellow teeth and all of that kind of thing that goes a spitting chewing tobacco juice, you know.
Well, thank you, Bears. That's one of the kindest things you've ever said to me. No, thank you very much. You know that point in your childhood where someone, a teacher, asked for that very first time, what do you want to be when you grow up? And my response was, this is honest truth, and I don't know, I was 4 years old, probably. And I said, I want to be 80 years old, and I want to be a grandpa.
So this is just going to get worse, right?
It's going to get much worse, yeah, because this has been my lifelong dream, is to be a grandpa and to be 80 years old.
So you want to be a grandfather, but presumably you want to be a grandfather for a very long time, right?
Yeah, for sure. The greatest title I've ever had is grandpa.
I got bad news for you.
What's that?
Typically, it only lasts a couple of years.
Why?
Well, have you noticed that grandpas don't last that long? A lot of them.
Oh, the grandpas don't last.
They keep disappearing, you know.
That's why I've started as early as possible and adopt as many grandkids as I can.
So they were a nice family, were they?
No, they were not nice. They were exceptional. I fell in love with every one of them. Just the whole family dynamic, the kids, their interests. Now, these kids are gospel revolution The first time that I met their mother was somewhere around 20 years ago when their oldest child was just born, I think. And the kids are sharing the gospel at their schools and things like that. Of course, this is Gainesville, Georgia. Christianity has a pretty good stronghold in the average mindset of the any family there. So there was a lot of discussion about what do I do, and also the girls know they are not going to be marrying somebody that doesn't understand the gospel. They just don't have any concept that they could possibly even live around somebody that would not understand and embrace the gospel. So we're not going to put a call out to all gospel revolutionaries who are looking for wives, because we got some weird gospel revolutionaries, and I just have to smack you down if you got around my grandkids. So.
Can we post their pictures? Can we?
No, we cannot.
Now, I heard that you had an unexpected surprise meeting with somebody. Was one of the friends of the family?
Oh, yes. Ashley's best friend, who's a psychology major at, you know, she's...
Hang on, mate, have you got birds there?
No, but I think you have them there.
Hold up. I just got to put the air on. Keep talking, mate. I'm just going to put the air on and turn the window, shut the window. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll wait for you to get back.
Only those who have been giving to God's work will be spared.
Hallelujah.
Now, you can make checks payable, of course, to Benny Hinn Ministries. If you're using your credit cards, make sure to put your name, your account number, your expiration date, and sign what it says signature.
You could have kept going, mate, but that's okay. I like to hear the juicy bits twice anyway.
Well, there's nothing like people hearing the birds that you've been talking about are just outside your window anyway, so I think it's quite all right.
Yeah, but these ones are vultures.
Yeah, they sounded fairly aggressive, for sure.
Gospel Revolution.
So, yes, Ashley's best friend, a psychology major. We had a really wonderful discussion. I have asked her to subject herself to an interview on the Gospel Revolution, and she has agreed. So we're going to be working this out. This young lady is brilliant in herself. In fact, I adopted her too. So actually, I adopted 4 grandkids. We were talking about that just because a new idea comes into the brain doesn't mean that the way the brain thinks changes. That there's this whole landscape, if you will. I that's the way I see it. I see it as the landscape of the brain, you know, valleys and peaks. But it really is made up of all kinds of receptors and neurons and all kinds of brain things. She was explaining to me how that when a new thought comes in to the mind that has practiced itself in dualism of good and evil, you know, just religion, that the brain itself becomes molded almost to that concept. So a new thought does not change the way the brain functions. So I said, I have something I call CPR, consistent, persistent, repetitive, listening to the same thing over and over and over again. I've observed this, and we certainly have, goodness gracious, we've had people tell us they listen to just one CD 75 times, you know, just ridiculous things. And she explained why that is something that is not out of the ordinary when one is wanting to change the way they think.
Tell us what you mean by CPR again, Michael.
Consistent, persistent, and repetitive listening to the gospel. We do it with music. We're consistent, persistent, repetitive. We do it with our politics. We're consistent, persistent, and repetitive. So I see the value in a consistent, persistent, and repetitive listening to the gospel. And the thing I had to acknowledge is that people do get a tremendous amount out of hearing the same thing over and over. And how many people I've heard say, you know, I've heard this series now 25 times and I just listened to it again. And I swear it is filled with things I've never heard before. There's great value in that. And she assured me that this is just science. This consistent and persistent and repetitive nature of giving information, whatever the information is, to the brain that has been formed, especially in dualistic thinking. And then you bring in something like the gospel. It's not just a new thought. It is a completely different way of thinking, completely different way of thinking. And for that transition to take place, it takes time. If you think that the gospel has had a great impact in your life just by virtue of the fact that you know the other way is not healthy, and it, you know, a lot of people get enough gospel to make them mad about where they were. And it seems to be just a part of the process. To be angry that somebody actually duped us into thinking such a ridiculous way.
Well, you can't really have spent all of your life within a certain belief structure, then find out that that belief structure was totally wrong and not feel in some way robbed, can you, Michael?
Oh, no, you're definitely going to feel robbed. But just because you know you've been robbed, just because you know that way of thinking is wrong, is not going to stop your brain from thinking that way.
You're touching on an area which is close to my heart, and that is neural pathways. I don't know if I've mentioned this before in a show, but some years ago I looked into this whole concept of neural pathways, and it turns out that when the Bible says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he, that is way more accurate than we actually ever guessed. Because when you consider something once, you are inclined to say, oh, that's a bit of a weird idea, or right through to, oh, that's rubbish.
Yeah.
A second time, well, it's a weird idea. But third time, you know, he makes a couple of interesting points in that. And fourth time, geez, I never thought of that before. That really does make a lot of sense. Fifth time, well, of course that's true. Sixth time, well, I never believed any other thing. I always thought that was true. So you get this evolution of our brain. And the way it works is this, I discovered, and I'd love to talk with a professional about this, so we've got to interview this young lady. But as I understand it, mum and four kids on the way home from school, and she's driving along, and there's a radio going, and the kids are frolicking in the back. And suddenly there is a thunderclap and the skies fall apart and the car in front starts to leak some oil, and suddenly she's all over the road, and what's the first thing that she says? Shut up, kids. I'm trying to drive. She has, at that moment, she has switched from driving as a subconscious skill, or as a skill which is exercised subconsciously, to a skill which is exercised cognitively. Now she's thinking out every single thing she does. She's missing the oil. She's trying to get the wipers on. She's turning the radio off. She's trying to shut the kids down. And so we have these two areas, cognitive skills and non-cognitive behavior, if you like.
Right.
So the first thing she wants to do is stop, and she's going to put her foot on the brake. But suddenly something's gone wrong with the brakes. The brakes don't work for her. Now, if she knows about gears and if she's driving a stick shift, she's going to go and try to go down through the gears. But maybe it's just an automatic and she's got no idea of what to do except pull that gear lever down into reverse or park or something. And she's going to keep going until she stops that car, even if she's got to put her feet out on the road and drag it to a stop with her own bare feet. She's going to, and the next time, the very next time that that happens, her brain is going to drill down to this new information, which she didn't have prior to that experience. And she'll go straight past stamp on the brakes harder, because that maybe they need stamping on harder. She'll go right past going down through reverse. She'll just go straight to whatever worked, which is probably pull the emergency brake on until you slowly come to a stop. And her brain is going to drill down to this. Because what has happened is, in the process of finding a new way of behaving, her brain has actually created a brand new, never existed before, neural pathway. A neural pathway along which her brain can move. So as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. And as we meditate on things and as we listen to things, I love hearing from Billy Thompson. She, I got to tell you, Jackie Barnard told me, mate, that she listens to you and me in the shower. Yeah, she says to Jackie the other Sunday morning, she said, I wonder what Michael would say if he knew that I take him into the shower with me.
And I bet she is crawling up the shower wall right now thinking, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he just did that.
Yeah, she doesn't know us, mate. And yes,
yes, she does, I'm afraid.
So, Billy, what you say to when I hear about you doing this, Jackie's told me that you will listen to every one of the podcasts, not once, but 4 and 5 times a week sometimes. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying, Michael, is exactly true. The more you listen, the more you let your mind soak. And this is really transformation of the mind. This is really what, let's face it, this is salvation, isn't it, Michael? Where our mind becomes changed by this gospel, which is the power of God.
Yeah, it is a, if you're going to find a new way of living, you got to find a new way of thinking. A new way of living does not come from altered behavior. A new way of living comes from altered way of thinking. And an altered way of thinking, the brain has to create new pathways to these automatic responses.
The bottom line really is, if you ask enough questions, you'll eventually hit a wall in Christianity, and that's where your freedom begins.
Absolutely. And that freedom begins when you break through to the other side of that circular thinking. And it really is a terrible place to live. I know how terrible it is. I lived there the vast majority of my life, to not be able to think my way through something because I'd never developed any pathways in my brain to resolve a problem. It was always bounced off of the walls of it wasn't meant to be. It was not meant to be. It was a miracle, or it was the devil, or it was any of these things. And see, once the brain gets set into that type of thinking, problem solving becomes something we're not very good at.
Because the brain is always going to go there next time because of the neural pathways that have been already settled. Gosh, it must be God.
Here's the exit. You know, you're traveling down the road and, you know, this is where we got off the exit, and we'll get off the exit even though the road has been extended, you know, for hundreds of miles. You know, getting off the exit is the thing that we do. The daughter who called her mother and was trying to prepare a roast at home and said, Mom, says, I'm getting ready to fix the roast, and this is my first one. She says, I'm doing it the way you always did it. She says, I'm just trying to figure out why we cut the end off of the roast. And then her mom said, well, honestly, I don't know. She said, actually, I watched my mom do it, and she always cut the end off of the roast. So they're talking and surmising why cutting the end off the roast makes it taste better, makes it juicier, makes it this, makes it that. And she says, well, I'll just call Mom, who is the grandmother of the girl who called. And so she calls her, and she says, Mom, we're needing to find out, you know, why we cut the end off of the roast. Stacy's just learning how to cook, and she called me, and I remember why. I just know we do that. And she says, well, honey, says, I don't know why you cut the end off the roast. She says, I always did it because I didn't have a big enough pan.
Oh, how true, Mike. Fella called Dresden James said this, Mike, when a well-packaged web of lies, and I know that wasn't a web of lies, but when a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous and its speaker a raving lunatic. That's you, Mike. You're the raving lunatic here.
Well, we all know that. Some things it doesn't take new pathways to get to.
We've always done it that way.
We've always done it that way. We've always thought that way. And when I think back on my experience in cause and effect Christianity, believing that there was a place of getting right with God, a place of becoming corrupted again, being in sin again, getting out of sin, in sin, out of sin, confessing sin, sinning again, you know, and
the
all
hamster
of
is dead, but the wheel is still turning.
Yes, it really is true. And then not just all of that, but all the implications of what being in sin means. Of course, that means the protection of God's gone. You're not going to be blessed. Life isn't going to go well for you, your children, or anyone else because there's sin in your life. And then, of course, you get the sin out, and then all of the expectations of nothing but good happening because now you're right with God again. This type of thinking is deadly to creativity, to possibility, to patience, long-suffering, gentleness, meekness, temperance, all of these things. It is a dead-end path for what we see in Paul's writing as the fruit of the Spirit, because everything is terminal. We have a terminal mentality, and it's not just end-of-the-world terminal mentality. It is, now I've sinned, now my relationship with God is over, my fellowship with God is done, My channel of blessing is over, and the floodgates of hell are now open, and most anything can happen. My children are vulnerable. My mate is vulnerable. My finances are vulnerable. Please let me stand on this side, along with many other gospel revolutionaries, and send out a call. Come home. Don't be afraid to break through that wall. And you say, well, how do I do that? CPR. The hamster's dead. It needs CPR. Consistent, persistent, repetitive information that will change not just what you think, it changes the way you think.
You must first realize the prison of your mind before you can escape it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only wall that really we have to worry about is the wall that we built in our own mind.
Gospel Revolution.
You must first realize the prison of your mind before you can escape it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only wall that really we have to worry about is the wall that we built in our own mind. According to Ephesians, God broke down all of the other walls that existed between us and anyone.
Yes, and that's between us and God and us and others is this wall that was broken down.
But we still have a wall in our mind, which only we can deal with.
Absolutely. Paul indicated very clearly that even though this wall was broken down 2,000 years ago, it still has to be broken down in the mind. The way of thinking through legalism has to be changed. Paul made the comment that the blood of Christ, which has purged us from sin, that same blood has the ability to purge our conscience from sin. So even though the human race has been purged from sin, sin no longer exists, law no longer exists, the dividing walls are all gone, the mind has to be purged from that way of thinking. Thus, curtains up, bring on the gospel. It is time for the only thing that will convert this mind that we have away from the thinking that we have. It is the only thing.
I'm hearing you say that the gospel can convert us from a sin mentality. Do you think the mystics worry about sin?
No, they don't. But
What about Calvinists?
I think they worry about sin.
What about Arminianists?
I think sin's a big problem for these guys.
Catholics?
Yep.
Mormons?
Yep.
One of these things is not like the others. One of these things doesn't belong. Can you tell which thing is not like the others? Before I finish my...
Well, hang on, the only odd group out, I mean, the mystics, why don't they worry about sin?
Well, they actually don't worry about sin because they renamed it.
Oh, that is so tricky. What did they call it?
Well, they call it karma, and karma is cause and effect. And when there are spiritual consequences to your actions and deeds, whether to the good or the bad, that's sin consciousness. Just because you change the names, just because you don't aspire to Christianity's terms, doesn't mean you don't think like a Christian.
Now, by sin consciousness, I think you're taking that from Hebrews chapter 10 that says that one covenant couldn't take it away, but the second covenant could. Blood of a goat couldn't do anything, but the blood of Jesus got rid of this sin consciousness. Mm-hmm. And yet, the whole damn planet labors under this sin consciousness.
Yes.
Why?
Well, the only thing that I can tell you, Barris, is they labor under it the same reason that you and I labored under it, and that is the lack of the gospel. You can't defend cause and effect religion, sin consciousness, and have the impact of the gospel to eradicate cause and effect religion, sin consciousness. And that really is what sin consciousness is. It is external spirituality, cause and effect. Religion, cause and effect, spirituality.
Parking space spirituality.
Parking space spirituality. You literally have to have the brain remolded. It has to be reshaped. New pathways have to be formed. Coming out of that circular room of the brain and stepping into the open field is a shocking thing to do. It's kind of like seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time. You really don't know what to do. It's like being lost in the woods for 10 years, and suddenly you step to the edge of a clearing, and there's this vast open space, and you're not lost anymore. What do you do with this new open space? What do you do with this Grand Canyon? How do you assimilate it? How do you absorb it? How do you navigate it? Where do you go from here? And it's really the very same place that gets described by people who have gone through and understood the gospel. It removes cause and effect spirituality or religion.
You sat with priests and prophets, with imams and gurus, quotes of Mia Baba and of Buddha. Questions. The mystery lingers while your identity slips like sand through your fingers.
Now, Mike, getting back to this conversation that we've already started today, what do you think's holding the human race back more than anything else?
The number one thing that is holding the human race back is corrupt thinking.
So how do you separate corrupt people from their corrupt thinking?
That's the whole point, Barris. You don't do that. You change the thinking of a righteous person, an incorruptible person, to thinking like an incorruptible person.
Well, how do you do that?
There's only one way, and that is the introduction of the gospel. Because there is nothing else that reveals that the human race is now incorruptible, immortal. In the context of Paul's teaching there in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, this is a done deal. When this mortal shall have put on immortality, when this corrupt shall have put on incorruption, and we have become immortal beings, we live forever, and we are incorruptible because we are of the incorruptible seed. Now, if we are incorruptible, how in the world did we get there? Jesus came into this life without sin. He was not born of the seed of Adam. He was born of the seed of God. And being born of the seed of God, he, being God, could not be corrupted by sin. If God does it one way or the other, there's no way you can call it sin. It just doesn't make any difference. Now, we were born again. The entire human race was born again. And we were born not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible seed.
Say that again.
The entire human race was born again 2,000 years ago. And we were born of incorruptible seed.
Well, yeah, but we could have gotten corrupted along the way. I mean, my kids are born, you know, pretty pure, but they get corrupted. Don't they? I mean, we couldn't have gotten corrupted along the way?
Not possible.
Why?
Because the seed. the actions and the deeds does not change the seed.
Like chip off the old block, like father, like son?
Yes, kind of like that.
Genetic code?
Yes.
Okay.
You can't change that. So regardless of my deeds, you can't change the fact that I'm a Williams. You can change my name. It's still not going to change the fact that I carry the exact genetic code of my father and his father and his father and his father and his father.
I bet there's a few Williams who'd like to change your name.
So this is coded into us. We are incorruptible in this spiritual genetic seed that we are now part of through the rebirth that was 2,000 years ago, which was the entire planet, and it is of an incorruptible seed.
Peter says in 1 Peter 1:23, he says, we are born again, or being born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible. By the Logos of God, we know who the Logos is, who lives and abides forever. Now, the Bible nowhere declares anything to be the Word of God except one thing, and that is Jesus the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
What you're quoting is being born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible. So we have been born of incorruptible seed. Or at least somebody has been. We'll figure out who in a minute. And it happened by the Logos of God, who lives and abides forever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just wanted to get that straight.
Yeah, absolutely. And however long the seed lives and abides, then that's how long the entirety of the seed abides. And that's what we are born of, that seed. Being born again is not taught in the New Testament as a personal or an individual experience. This is a one seed replacing the seed of Adam.
Isn't it interesting how modern Christianity takes these four or five different words and makes them exactly the same? Saved, born again, redeemed, reconciled, justified.
Yes.
I mean, why didn't those New Testament writers just make it simple and just use one word if they meant the one word?
And that's why all of these have to be whitewashed, if you will, into meaning all the same thing, because they don't mean the same thing. And if they don't mean the same thing, then we have to think our way through this.
Well, why does religion make all of these things the same thing? It's not sensible.
Well, because that's what supports the religion. That's what supports the way of thinking. And once the way of thinking has been molded, your brain will make things up.
Neural pathways again.
Now, yes.
Being born of incorruptible seed, that's a pretty big thing. What's the fallout of that?
The fallout of being born of incorruptible seed is that we are incorruptible. Corruption cannot inherit incorruption. This is why you can't take corrupt people and change them into incorrupt people. The entire race had to die. The entire seed had to be destroyed, taken to the grave, terminated, ended completely.
Born again of incorruptible seed.
Born again of incorruptible, absolutely incorruptible seed.
By the Logos.
Yes, which is Christ. And you can't be born of a seed a separate time from when the seed came out of the ground. It's just not. Well, whatever was in the seed came out of the ground, and whatever came out of the ground was in the seed. And you can't become a part of the seed 2,000 years later. It's just not possible.
So Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it's useless. So that's what he did. And you're saying that we were born of that seed, that incorruptible seed himself.
Yes. 2,000 years ago.
Now, help me with this, Michael. I am incorruptible, end of story, full stop, period. I can hurt other human beings. I could do wrong by other human beings, but I am still incorruptible. I am still incorrupt in God's eyes. That's going to upset a lot of people, Michael.
Tell me about it. It has been for a couple of decades now. What a person who thinks they are corrupt does as compared to a person who knows they are not corrupt would respond to a situation. It's wholly different, Barris, and this is where the renewing of the mind comes. The gospel, when it breaks down all of these walls and this corruptible way of thinking that we can become corrupted, that we are right with God, we're not right with God, we're born again now, this group's not born again. See, all of these are the walls that were reconstructed by religion that were all broken down by the cross 2,000 years ago.
The dogma, the law was destroyed, and we just reinvented more dogma.
Absolutely. And we even just changed the words and said it's not dogma anymore.
Well, that's only good advertising.
Absolutely. So the value of the gospel and the CPR, the consistent, persistent, repetitive nature of hearing, is to convince the incorruptible that they are incorrupt, to convince the righteous that they are righteous, to convince the holy that they are holy, to convince the saints that they are saints, to convince those that are without spot and without blemish before God that they are without spot and without blemish before God.
If humans were born of incorruptible seed, wouldn't that show? And if so, how?
It would show, as long as we didn't get taught corruptible things.
So you're saying we're all born incorruptible, but we're brought up in a culture that teaches us stuff that determines how we act?
Yes. First off, you've got to know that you're righteous and holy.
Why?
If
I'm a black person, I don't have to think that I'm black to be black. The seed will carry through, won't it, Mike?
Well, it all depends on what the person's concept of what being black is.
Did you ever see that movie, The Jerk, with Steve?
Yes.
I guess that's what you're talking about. Okay, I'm still trying to get my mind around it, but if you talk long enough, I probably will understand it, Mike. So keep going, will you?
So this is the entire mission of the Gospel Revolution, and that is to help people to experience what it is to not perform to be righteous, but perform because you are righteous. Now, no one can tell me that that's not going to make an impact on people's conduct, because we act out of what we believe we are. And it is imperative that we know who we are in Christ, especially in this issue of sin and righteousness, because a person who has hopelessly sinned will, without care and without conscience, have a tendency to harm themselves and others.
Michael, there is a philosophical argument that goes, all poodles are dogs, but not all dogs are poodles. Now, what I hear you saying is that if you are righteous, holy, and perfect, and you know that you are righteous, holy, and perfect, and incorruptible, you will act differently than if you don't know it. The knowledge of it is going to change you, the way you think. The way you think is going to change your behavior. Now, what we find is that Christianity and most religion says, look, good people do good things. Therefore, if we do good things, we'll be good people. But you see, all poodles are dogs, but not all dogs are poodles. Doing good things doesn't make you a good person, but a good person will do good things. Is this the way you're talking in relation to how it will change me if I know that I'm righteous, holy, and perfect, and incorruptible?
Obviously. See, that's the natural progression. You act out of the way you think.
How will I think differently if I know that I'm righteous, holy, and pure?
Number one, you'll be out from under the oppression of guilt and judgment.
How will that change me?
That changes drastically because we're not in this reaction mode to the things that go on around us.
You mean we don't have to figure out God's paying us back?
Yes. I'm telling you, you talk about something that will stir blistering anger in someone is to feel that they've been unjustly treated by God. Your wife died. Your child was run over by a car. And if these things are God's determination, you've not experienced grief that can turn destructive, self-destructive, and destructive to others, like that type of grief that is resulted out of feeling like God himself has done me wrong.
You know, my first marriage ended, and my first wife, she shot through with another guy. And to be honest, I don't blame her. She probably waited too long, to be honest. But I was madder than a cut snake, mate. I was as angry as a hornet for years because I knew that she was a born-again Christian. I was a born-again Christian. And I was going to have to get to heaven and smile at her. And there was going to be no payday for her, you know, and that just seems so unreasonable to me. Gosh, wasn't I hard done by and so forth. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, all of that type of thinking is the thinking that the gospel can break the entire human race out of, and therefore experience some rational thought, because, as you said, that's just not rational at all to think that way. But because it's irrational doesn't mean that it's not going to be the way that we think. And of course, when you carry that around, the mind begins to think, it is so unjust, how can I bring justice?
That's why it's going to be, I may as well be part of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what am I going to do to make sure that she knows she did wrong?
So, bottom line, Michael, you are incorruptible, right?
Well, no, yes, the whole planet is incorruptible.
Before we get to the bottom line, what would you do for $500,000? Let's see how incorruptible you are. What wouldn't you do? I mean, let's round it out at around a million.
Well, first off, I'd have to be good at it. So, and I don't intend to tell the entire world all the things I'm good at, okay?
No, I'm gonna give you $1 million, mate, if you just do, if you vote differently. Have I corrupted you then?
Not in the eyes of God. That's just, even if you raise it to the wealth of the entire planet and make it murder. We cannot experience what Adam experienced. We cannot be corrupted the way Adam was corrupted. And that is the big difference between this new creation and the first creation. The first creation was created subject to corruption.
God created, well, he wasn't the first, was he? God created the devil subject to corruption, didn't he?
Well, the angel was subject to corruption. Man was subject to corruption. And
who was the first one that came along that was not?
Well, the very first one that came along that was without corruption was Christ.
And we are in him?
And we are in him.
And he is in us?
And he is in us. By Job, I think you got it, Barris.
Okay, bottom line. Tell us what we've talked about this morning so that I can really understand what we've been doing for the last hour and a half.
We've been talking about the brain, and the brain on religion, the brain on the gospel. We've been talking about the difference between cause and effect religion, which leaves a person open to the possibility of become corrupted in the eyes of God, and the gospel, which as a result of the cross leaves us with the inability to become corrupted based on deeds whatsoever. We've been talking about the power not to change your deeds, but to change the way you think. And if we have a way of thinking that is not based in cause and effect religion, this world is going to become a much better place for all of us to live.
I'm sure you've heard the stories of motivation with the donkey and the stick. In short, it goes like this. You've got a donkey, and you're going to use something to motivate the donkey, and it's going to be a stick, and you're going to hit the donkey with a stick, and the donkey's going to move because it doesn't want to get hurt with a stick. This is used right around the world, and in fact, the church may have actually invented it with the whole concept of punishment if you don't behave. And it's basically fear motivation. The other form of motivation which is common is incentive motivation. Now, instead of a stick, you'd use a carrot on the end of a stick and hold it out in front of the donkey. And that works well as long as the donkey is hungry enough, the stick is short enough, and the carrot is juicy enough. Both of these motivations come from outside. They're both external motivations, and they're both the kind of motivations which are used by the world and the church alike. The advantages of these motivations are, of course, it gets a job done quickly, and in the short run, your performance may improve, but nothing else generally will. Now, the disadvantages are people get used to the stick and then a bigger stick is needed, or the donkey gets to eat enough and he's not hungry anymore. But what we've been talking about today is what we like to think of as not external motivation, but internal motivation. And that's where, instead of being a donkey, you've just been changed internally into a racehorse. And that's what happened with the new creation. Instead of a creation of donkeys, now we're a creation of racehorses. You don't need that kind of motivation. But if you want to put yourself back under that motivation, yours is the choice. So I would like to leave you with this thought today. You are a new creation. You are incorruptible. There is nothing that can touch you. What are you going to do with it?
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the
Gospel Revolution?
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family. Do
if the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader. Persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules. God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts. Rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape it. Those pesky rules, don't forget them. Heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine. And don't forget all those bloody rules. Relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never ending bloody rules, and Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity, oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating, oh, and did I mention the freaking rules? And so it is that we must leave you, folks. You know, I very much appreciate all of our dedicated revolutionaries who support this show. And in that respect, they're the real producers of this weekly PowerCast. Mike and I are just sort of the voices, but these are the people who make it possible for you to hear this PowerCast every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us on 123-456-40971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and you can catch us on Facebook at the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Remember, no real religionists were harmed in the making of this program, and thanks to our good buddy Marcel Rolse in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so, it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, and from the very, 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 very far end of the telephone wire hidden deep in the heart of Texas.
This is Michael Williams, and I'm saying goodbye, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's always fun. I like not knowing what I'm going to do. My brain has had to form entire new pathways to deal with never knowing what I'm going to do. So thank you for coming along for the ride. I hope it was fun for you. It was fun for me. And also to the folks who hosted the meeting there in Gainesville, who did anything. Oh my gosh, you guys did such a magnificent job. And we had a really, really wonderful time. Thank you guys for driving such distances and traveling to get there and being a part of it. We love you. We appreciate you. And we'll have these CDs out and ready for you just as soon as possible. And we're going to do this again next week, only...
Better. Much, much better.